Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoors, the official podcast of Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. We live by the motto, it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. And we live the outdoor lifestyle every day. Whether you're a landowner or dreaming of joining the ranks of those closest to the earth, we're your brothers and sisters of the outdoors. We hunt, we fish, we're stewards of the land. And our Living the Dream team will show you the way to enjoying the land and all the outdoor pursuits it has to offer. Here's your host, Bill Cooper.
Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Cooper, and this evening I'm sitting at home recording right here at my kitchen table. And I'm talking to an individual. I've talked to him several times over the years, and I'm not sure where we really first met, but his name is Tyler Goodell, and he's from down in my part of the world towards Swamp East, Missouri. Tyler, good to have you on the show.
Hey, it's good to be here, Bill.
Well, it took us long enough to hook up.
I know it. You know, it's one of them things about social media. That's one of the blessings. If we didn't have it, we may have never crossed paths at all, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I followed you quite a bit when you started writing for the River Hills Traveler several years ago. You're kind of a fishy dude, you know, seem to know a lot about fish and certainly love them. And boy, I've seen just some phenomenal photographs that you've taken of various fish species over the years, so you're quite a photographer as well, so you're kind of a jack of all trades, I guess.
I try to get out and about and see all the beautiful things I can. My love of fish started when I was just a little kid. My grandparents had some property along Indian Creek in northern Butler, Missouri, a little Black River tributary, and a lot of chain pickerel and small bass, and it was loaded with brook garters and long-eared sunfish. And if you've seen them things, they're some of the most beautiful fish on the planet.
They really, really are. Everybody's fascinated by those. It's such a colorful fish. And, you know, the little pumpkin seed that we talk about out of Ozark streams is probably the most beautiful fish in the streams. At least that's my opinion, you know.
Absolutely. I'm right there with you. They're so pretty. I got a tattoo of one on my forearm, I'll tell you. I'm in love with them things. Oh, yeah.
Yes, sir. Well, they are a gorgeous little fish, and I just chuckle every time I float down the river, and that's quite often. I carry several rods, but I always carry an ultralight with some kind of tiny jig on it, you know, and I'll catch some little pumpkin seeds. And I don't care every trip I made. If I catch one, I'm going to hold him in the palm of my hand and take a photograph of him.
Oh, yeah.
I've done that a thousand times.
You talk about the name pumpkin seed. You know, everybody's like, oh, you're catching pumpkin seeds. I'm like, no, I know you guys call them pumpkin seeds, but they're long-eared sunfish.
Exactly.
If you want a pumpkin seed, go to Minnesota or Wisconsin. That's the only place I found it. Oh, so, yeah, everybody's got their local names for them. Grandpa called them red bellies. You know, if it wasn't a bluegill, it was a red belly.
Red belly. Now, see, and they're actually a red belly perch or bluegill or something way down south.
South and east, there's the red breast sunfish. Gets quite a bit bigger than the long ear.
Yeah, low long ears. Yeah, they're tiny little things.
Boy, if they grew to 5 pounds, they'd be more popular than a largemouth bass, you know?
Oh, they would. Well, all bluegills would. I tell you, I'm still, you know, I've fished all the way from Alaska to the Yucatan, and hey, a little in Southeast Asia as well. But to this day, my absolute favorite way to fish is just hopping a belly boat and jumping a farm pond with a fly rod, you know, when the bluegill are bedding, boy.
Fly rod and a popping bug.
That's all you need, man, and that's still, I just absolutely love that. And of course, I grew up in Southeast Missouri, Mississippi County, in fact, close to Mississippi River, but we had lots of bayous and sloughs to fish, you know. And I was fly fishing by the time I was 10 years old. And I hoed cotton for a couple of bachelor brothers 2 or 3 miles down the gravel road, and they were fly fishermen. I guess that's probably what first struck up my interest. But I was down at Johnson Blue Hole one time, right by the Mississippi River. The levee had broke there in 1937, I guess, and washed out about a 60-acre lake, just as sandy as it can be. But I'd catch a lot of bluegill down there. But I was actually down there bass fishing one day. I couldn't have been 10 or 11 years old. And I found a dead water moccasin. And it had a popping bug stuck in it. And so I just cut that popping bug out. They were called nitwits. I don't know if you remember nitwits or not. They were hard plastic bodies. Some had little legs on them. Some of them didn't. They were just plain. But, boy, they were deadly. But anyway, I cut that thing out, and I was so proud of it. That was my first popper. Well, it's back on those guys' farm early the next Monday morning to hoe cotton again and said something about that popper. One of them spoke up and said, well, that's mine. I said, well, it's mine now. he hooked that cottonmouth, and he killed it, but he wouldn't touch it to cut that popper out. You know, he wanted that popper back, but I wouldn't give it to him.
Chubby had to arm wrestle you or something.
Oh, yeah. You bet. They were great old guys. They taught me quite a bit about fly fishing, but we had a bayou run right through the southern part of our farm called Black Bayou, and Tyler, that's honest truth, man. The time I was 11 years old, I was catching, you know, 6, 7, 8 pound largemouth on big poppers. I'd seen them in Outdoor Life magazine, you know, got really inspired. But childhood memories, aren't they great? I'm sure you're the same.
I poured through Field and Stream and Outdoor Life and First Fishing Game. And, you know, that was before, you know, internet. You couldn't just get on there and Google search this or that, you know. So
yeah, exactly.
I went through piles and piles of, you know, Missouri Conservationist and Ducks Unlimited, everything you think of, you know. And then I was a library nerd too. I was in there digging through everything I could find on hunting, fishing, trapping, birds, butterflies, you know, crawdads, everything. You know, I wanted to learn it all, and I was enough of a sponge that I did learn a lot of it and just keep it with me.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I can remember one Christmas, I still wasn't very old. I want to say I was probably 7, 8, 9 years old, but one year my mom bought me from Christmas these little Golden Nature books. They were, I don't know, 6 by 8 or something, if they were that big, and on all kinds of subjects, you know, trees, insects, fish, snakes, rocks, weather, whatever. But there was like 8 or 10 of them, and I wore those things out. And
and
that's where my first, you know, heavy duty interest came in nature as such. And then my dad worked part time at Big Oak Tree State Park. We could see the backside of the park from our farm. It was probably a mile and a half away, but could see it across the bayou, you know, and I actually worked there a couple of summers in high school. So just intrigued by the outdoors. And of course, we were so poor, we couldn't get too far away from home. Didn't travel much, but boy, I just felt like I had a piece of heaven right in my back pocket, you know, because we could walk right out the back door and kick up rabbits, walk to the bayou and fish. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was about the same way where I grew up. I grew up about 5 miles north of Fisk, right on the St. Francis River. I was about maybe a half a mile from the river itself, and surrounded by sloughs and bar ditches and rice fields. You know, it was if you liked to duck hunt, it was good in the wintertime, and if you liked to gig frogs and catch bass, it was good during the summertime. And I was, you know, as soon as I could get out by myself, I wasn't 6 or 7 years old, you know. I'd walk down about a quarter mile from the house. There was a little bar ditch that run alongside the church, and I'd tell my mom, I'm going down the churchyard. And that's where I caught my first, you know, decent largemouth by myself. And boy, I was proud. I think I had two or three of them. And we'd got a rise, a bunch of rain, and the ditch was muddy, but I was thrown out there with worms on the bottom and just waylaying them bass.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you could probably get worms like I could. We just go to any road ditch or wet spot, you know. Now, people think I'm lying when I say this, but we were digging earthworms 18 inches long, half as big around your little finger, you know.
You'd rake back the leaves and stuff on the edge of the road. You could fill a bubblegum bucket full of them in just, you know, 30 minutes. And it's not as good now. I don't know, probably pesticides or.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm certain. But,
I just get a bunch of them and go down there, ride my bicycle down there, and, you know, had everything balanced on the bicycle handle. But I remember it like it was yesterday. Then I think there was 3 big bass and the tails hanging over the bucket. Boy, I was as proud as you could be.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And of course, another thing, I'm sure it was true of your family too. You really, man, I can remember being a little guy. outside feeling like a man because I said brought some fish or a squirrel or a rabbit home, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Put meat on the table. Now, it was important to us. We ate a lot of fish and wild game. So if there was, I never thought about it. I don't know how old I was when I first heard the word recreation. You never thought of it. Yeah, I thought everybody in the world lived like that, you know.
Exactly. You know, it wasn't recreation or hobby. It was a lifestyle. And
exactly.
My dad, we did construction work, and then during the wintertime, construction work slowed down. We'd bid on jobs for the Forest Service or Conservation Department to do timber stand improvement work. So we were always in the woods, you know.
Yeah.
And that's just how it was. If the weather was too rough to work, we'd hunt. Weather was really, really good. You knew the crappie were getting ready to bite. We'd crappie fish. And both my grandpas and my dad, you know, diehard crappie fishermen. Both my grandpas are gone now. Yeah. Dad, every year he still hammers the crappie. And that's really the only fishing he's interested in is catching big crappie. And he only fishes one place.
Uh-huh.
And you've probably been there, Duck Creek Conservation Area.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, many times.
He'll fish the big crappie there in the springtime. And after they're done, he doesn't care if he picks up a fishing rod. Until the next spring. That's just how it's always been.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's not a bad choice. Particularly, you can get a big crappie. You know, there's nothing tastes any finer than a deep fried crappie filet. You know,
yeah.
In fact, well, I don't have any crappie fish.
Walleye's right up there with them.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they are too.
A little better.
But yeah. I don't. Yeah. Now I start to say we didn't have any walleye over my part of the country, but I take that back, that Johnson Blue who I was talking about. I hooked a big walleye there one time. I'm sure it was over 11 or 12 pounds. I was in a little boat, and it towed me around and got it right up close to the boat, and everybody locally called them jack salmon. But I had one of them silver long-handled dip nets, and I slid it down the water and went to raise it up to net that fish, and I saw the sunlight flash off it, and that fish whirled real big and broke my line, man. I was a little upset. I was going to be famous in the communities there catching a big jack salmon. But all I can do is tell a story, and all the little guys that sat around and spit tobacco and played checkers, you know, at the local general store, they just kind of raised their eyebrows. And, well, boy, I've never seen a jack salmon quite that big around here, but you know.
they're around. They're just few and far between in some spots. Other spots, you can really get on them, you know.
Yeah. So
that's everything.
Well, right there in the introduction, I heard you mention pickerel. Was that grass or chain pickerel?
We got them both here, but chain pickerel, you know, Duck Creek that we were talking about, some of the biggest ones you'll ever see will come out of there. Somebody caught one on a limb line. You can't limb line it anymore, but I believe back in the 70s, somebody caught one on the limb line that was over 7 pounds.
Wow, now that's
a beast of a chain pickerel.
Yeah.
State record, pole and line record, come right from below Clearwater Spillway, and it was 5 pounds even.
5 pounds even.
So, yeah.
Well, I know I was on 11 point. It's been probably 10 years ago. My wife, Diane, and I were down there deer hunting, and we had a nice camp set up, and we were catching trout out in right out front, and had a bear encounter that evening too. It stayed on the other side of the river, but I think he's wanting our fish. But next day, she caught like a 22-inch pickerel on a big minnow. I cast the same spot, caught one that was about 28 and a half, I think. And at the time, that was looking like a state record. I just took a picture and released it. I didn't go weigh it.
28 and a half is a giant. My personal best is like 26 and 5/8 of an inch. I get real picky. Everybody would call, 26 and a half. No, 26 and 5/8.
Exactly. Yeah. But what I was getting around to, and reading Outdoor Life and all that, I'd seen the northern pike and the muskies. They caught up north and everything, you know. And I was piddling around a little bitty creek. I mean, this thing wasn't much over a foot wide, just a little drainage went down through one of our fields, and it's real grassy. And I spilled around down there grabbing a few crayfish one day, and I saw a little fish, and it looked just like a northern pike. I just knew it was a northern pike. And I managed to hand grab that little rascal and got him out and fiddled with him a few seconds and put him back in there. And I was telling everybody I found a northern pike. Well, they was telling me I was all nuts, but nobody knew about the pickerel. But I finally did my research and figured out I had caught a grass pickerel.
But, yeah, yeah, there's some nice ones down there in those ditches too.
Yeah, and I never caught my first one on rod and reel until I was at Mingo with Bob Todd. You know, used to be editor of the River Hills Traveler, and I caught it on a big spinner bait. I threw it over by a log, and something just grabbed a hold of it and slowly started swimming off. I thought I had an 8-pound largemouth, and it was a pretty good size pickerel. I don't remember. It wasn't as big as that 28-incher, but it was nice. But, boy, that was a fight once that thing woke up, and it literally tore my spinnerbait all to pieces. It wasn't even usual. Oh, yeah. Broke the blades off of it and bent the wire. And I was pretty proud of myself, though, and Bob was too. But I also caught a fish there for the first time, the flyers. And I had never seen one before. Now, don't you hold a state record for flyers?
Yes, sir. And I caught it at Duck Creek. So pretty well the same system you would have, same kind of area over there. You were a stone's throw from where that would have been caught. Yep.
Yeah. Well, didn't you set that record twice in one day?
Yeah, I caught two the exact same size in the same day.
Ah.
And they, like I say, they weren't real huge, 11 ounces. And that for a flyer, though, that's a pretty good size fish. You're talking, you know, 9 1/4, 9.5-inch fish and 11 ounces. That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
For
it really is. Now, for people that don't have any idea of what that is, can you describe that flyer, what it would look like, colors, patterns?
Well, kind of looks like a mix between a bluegill and a crappie, but it's got a lot more spines than a crappie even has. And on a crappie, you got the great big dorsal fin, and on a flyer, you got the big dorsal fin and the big anal fin. So you just got spines everywhere and a beautiful slab-sided fish. And over there out of that clear water, that even that tannic water of Mingo and Duck Creek, they look like bars of gold with black specks on them.
Right. Beautiful fish.
Some of the most beautiful fish you'll ever see.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people think, you know, if you're going to catch sunfish, you got to go in the summertime. Well, these flyer, we catch them in February, March, and around the 1st of April when the crappie are doing their thing. That's when the flyer are doing their thing, too. And when I broke that state record, I was crappie fishing, and I kind of pitched over beside a cypress tree, and something bit at my bobber. I was like, what the heck is going on? So I moved my rig a little shallower and pitched it back over there, and I caught one, and I let it go at first. I thought, wow, that is a pretty good one. I let him go, and then caught a little bit bigger one. I thought, well, I'll put him in the bucket. And caught another one. I thought, well, you know what? I'm going to take these and I'm going to weigh them tomorrow and just see how big they are. And the conservation agent for Butler County meet me at Millie's gas station, weighed it on a certified scale and took a couple pictures. And sure enough, it was a new state record. They both were same exact size.
Now, you don't catch a lot of flyers, do you? They're not real plentiful, are they?
In some places like Monopoly Marsh and Ditch 5, Ditch 11 and Mingo, you've got a really good population of them. But they are picky. You know, you can catch them during the springtime when the big ones are, you know, getting ready to fan out beds and do their spawning. But after that, it's like they're ghosts. You just can't hardly find them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I got to ask you, we talked about a mutual acquaintance of ours the other day. Tom, what's his last name, from Indiana?
Tom Berg. Yeah.
Tom Berg. Now, did you take Tom to catch a flyer?
Don't believe so. I think he'd already caught a flyer.
I see.
We got out in the Ozarks and caught everything from Ozark sculpin to chain pickerel to bleeding shiners, rainbow darters, all kinds of neat stuff.
I bet he was happy. He was in his element. He likes to check species off of that list of his.
Oh, yeah. And that's one of the things that I, you know, when I take clients out, the majority of people that I take out, they want to go for multi-species. They don't just want to go fish for smallmouth or just go fish for walleye. They want everything. Don't matter if it's a top minnow, a darter, a sculpin, a mad tom. They want to catch them all.
Yeah,
it's like real world Pokemon hunting. You know, these little kids that they want to get all the Pokemon cards and catch all the Pokemon. Well, these grown men in the middle of the night will be excited about a 2-inch fish if it's one they haven't caught before.
Exactly. First time I met Tom Berg, we were both old Larry Whiteley, who was with Branson Tourism, used to be the radio voice for Bass Pro. He'd gotten a hold of me. I guess he'd had another rider cancel on him, and he needed to fill that spot. So I ran down to Branson and hooked up with Tom. And we had several guys we caught. Trout, you know, largemouth, smallmouth, and we're catching huge crappie on bull shows. But Tom wanted to leave and go chase some of these minnows in a little bitty creek, you know. So I tagged along. It was pretty interesting, you know. I still really been catching those big slab crappie, but I got I got an education anyway.
Yeah. Well, I think it was right before that trip that he met up with you, or right after he came out and fished with me on that. Same trip, and I met him through his brother Mike Berg. Mike comes down 2-3 times a year to fish. I mean, he'll be down Labor Day weekend.
Well, you guys, I'm sure, will have another grand trip. Well, folks, we're going to take a short break here, but don't go away. I'm going to keep Tyler on the line in the second half. We're going to talk about his guide service. Hey, you'll want to fish with this guy. I'm Bill Cooper. We'll be right back.
Our forefathers gave us a Bill of Rights. One of those is the right to step in the front door of Pond Center, where the faint sound of eagles screeching from on high a bounding purple mountain's majesty browse the walls full of glorious firearms. It's hard not to shed a patriotic tear as your red, white, and blue blood becomes fortified by the sight of true freedom. Pond Center, located at 408 Highway 72 East in Rolla, Missouri. Or give us a call at 573-426-GUNS.
Hey everyone, this is Michael Collins with Misty Mountains Guiding Service. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what we offer. Misty Mountains is a smallmouth and trout specific guiding service that caters to the Northern Ozarks region. My areas include the Upper Merrimack River, the Gasconade, and a few smaller creeks in the Mid-Missouri area. Whether you enjoy casting streamers to bass, drifting a dry fly, or ripping lips with spinning gear, I've got you covered. Fishing is made easy in my state-of-the-art drift boat raft. I control the boat with ease while you or yourself and a buddy do all the work at catching fish. Besides a great day on the water, I provide all needed gear, a delicious shore lunch, and as much fishing knowledge as you can carry with you on the way home. Spots for the 2024 season are going fast. Give me a call or text today to get your trip booked. My number is 573-823-9057. Find me on Facebook and Instagram at Misty Mountains Guiding Service. It's always an adventure with Misty Mountains.
This is Dan from the White Buffalo Fly Shop, your gateway to Missouri's blue ribbon trout streams and world-class smallmouth water. Whether you're headed to Mill Creek, the Kern, or the Gasconade, we've got the flies, the gear, and the local know-how to help you fish with confidence. If you're looking to sharpen your casting skills, join one of our hands-on clinics. Or if you'd like to craft your own fly rod, build it with us in one of our rod building courses. You're always welcome in our fly tying nights to swap stories, share patterns, and get the latest hatch reports. White Buffalo Fly Shop is more than just a place to gear up. It's a hub for our local community. You'll find us at 605 North Pine Street in Rolla or online at whitebuffaloflyshop.com.
Welcome back to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm Bill Cooper. I hope you caught that first segment with Tyler Goodale. Am I pronouncing your name right, Tyler?
Yeah, it's Goodale. Goodale. Well, okay. Most people say good all. I don't understand why.
That's the way I was pronouncing it, but I heard you pronounce it Goodale. Makes sense. That's the way it's spelled.
I don't know. Don't know if my ancestors were beer makers or ale makers or drunks. Who knows?
Goodale, I bet they were.
we traced some back all the way to the British folks that first come over, and then we tracked some back to East Tennessee Cherokee. So I've got a little bit of the good, a little bit of the you know.
Yeah, I understand. My folks came from Tennessee too, and we were Irish. And I always tell folks, because there's not many of us left. And I said, well, how come there's not many of you left? I said, because they hung or shot most of them. I was just one of them that got away.
That's how it goes.
Probably a little truth in that. Well, Tyler, in this segment, man, I'd like to dive into your ties, multi-species guide service. Now, I've heard of a lot of guide service in my lifetime, but I don't think I've ever heard of a guide service with the term multi-species in it. What inspired you to do that?
Well, a lot of my clientele. Let's just go back to when I first started, you know, guiding. I got introduced to a man by the name of Steve Wozniak, and he's from California. Really big species hunter. He wants to catch them all. And he had a little blog going, 1000fish.com or something like that, where he'd send out a monthly report of what he caught and where he'd been and this and that. Anyway, he inducted into the IGFA Hall of Fame. I think he's third in the world as far as world records goes.
Really?
I can't remember the counts, but the last time I texted him, he was up to, I think, 2,340 species.
Wow.
91 countries and close to 300 world records.
That is incredible. That guy's put in some effort, hasn't he?
Definitely has. He travels a lot for business, and while he does it, he fishes. Well, he wanted to fish in the Ozarks. He'd been in contact with another friend of mine, Ben Cantrell. And every time, you know, they talk about the Ozarks, my name came up. Well, it just so happened he reached out and wanted to book me for a few guiding days. So we met and put him on fish, which he'll say in some of his reports, he took me to this little creek that didn't even look like it supported fish life, but looks were deceiving. And he racked up six or seven different species there. So, yeah, a little eccentric, a little obnoxious, but he's a great guy once you get to know him.
I've known a lot of fishermen like that.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, that kind of started my guiding, and he's been out six or seven times since chasing this species or that species and trying to knock them all off the list. And, you know, everywhere from, you know, Poplar Bluff area chasing brook garters and grass pickerel to North Fork of the White River for dusky striped shiners and Ozark bass. So we've been all over the place.
Well, sound like you've had a good time with them. Hey, it never hurts to hook up with a person like that because, boy, do they ever open your eyes to a bigger, bigger world, don't they?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of got it started, and with multi-species, that's kind of why I'm like, hey, we can chase whatever you want, you know, as long as it's legal and not an endangered species or something like that, let's get after it. And then you have your folks that, you know, bread and butter guiding in the Ozarks. They want to catch smallmouth. They want to catch largemouth. They want to catch walleye. And I'll do that too. You know, right now it's hot. Walleye, you can get them, but it's a wintertime thing, you know.
So right.
A lot of the guiding kind of slows down in the summertime for some species and amps up for others. That's just how it is. You know, smallmouth right now, topwater early in the morning. If it gets real tough, we'll give them big live bait in the afternoon, and we'll flat waylay them.
Yeah. Now, where are you catching your smallmouth? St. Francis, or where are you going?
Oh, man, everywhere from the whitewater to the caster, St. Francis, black, current. I haven't fished much west of the current, you know, haven't got into, I've never fished 11 point in my life.
Oh, you need to go. That's my absolute favorite river.
Just far enough west that I just haven't messed around over it much.
Right. Well, it sounds like you got a lot of good water right where you are, but you mentioned several names there that don't get a lot of publicity, you know, like the Caster, the black, gets a little more than it used to. But I actually fished Caster River many, many years ago. Father-in-law of mine used to have a farm close to the Caster. He was from East Prairie, but he had a hog farm up at Patton Junction. Wasn't too far from Caster River. We used to fish it once in a while. But it's good to hear people fishing and promoting those areas so that other people get to fish them as well. But what species do you guide for the most?
Well, that's hard because, like I say, most of my guiding has been for multi-species guys. They want to get out and catch a variety of, you know, what they call micro fishing and micro species.
Yeah. Well, you're kind of known for that. Sounds like you've kind of developed a guide business around that very idea.
Yeah. I don't know really anybody else that guides micro fishing folks, but as far as the bigger fish goes, it's smallmouth and walleye. That's what people want to chase. And the way that some of these Ozark rivers are, like Black River in particular, we had a terrible flood. You know, some people lost their lives. Lots of businesses were destroyed. And it was terrible. And, you know, every few years we get a bad flood like that that just tears things up. And
well, that's been the worst one on record, though, correct?
Absolutely. I think there was like over 13 inches of rain fell in just a few hour period in one fork of the Black River. I can't remember if it was East Fork or West Fork, but it absolutely destroyed everything in its path.
Yeah, that was.
You know, it may be another month before the river ever clears up, and that's just the way Black River is. It catches so much sediment. I don't know, it's a combination of just the elevation and the substrate type, or probably that mixed with probably not so good land use practices. It catches a ton of sediment, and it seems like it takes forever to clear up.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But once it does, you've got an absolute gem of a fishery.
Yeah.
Lots of smallmouth in the upper stretches. And, you know, the closer you get Poplar Bluff, you get less smallmouth, more spotted bass, seems like more walleye and bigger walleye, too.
Right. Well, I'm sure it's going to be interesting. You check the river out after it gets in shape, because a flood that massive, it's bound to have made some pretty colossal changes in the river. Probably be some new holes, maybe some holes filled in. I know I've had that here on the Merrimack. It's been up and down like a yo-yo. I live about 5 minutes from it, not too far from Steelville. And I haven't been on it a lot just because of that. It seems like every time I get on the Merrimack, late spring and summer, it's been falling, and you know what that story is. At least that's my excuse. You know, I don't never catch as many fish on a falling stream as like you do when it's coming up. But still, hey, I'm still going to get out there, and I'm sure you're doing the exact same thing. Well, where do most of your clients come from, Tyler?
That's a hard one to answer too. I've got return clients that come all the way from California. I've got return clients that come down from Indiana that, you know, the Berg brothers, Tom and Mike, they come down from Indiana there. And I've got Gabriel, a buddy of mine, comes out from New Mexico. And then I had another gentleman by the name of Giulio that came out from Italy last year.
Really?
So... you get folks from all over the place.
Wow. Well, what do people think about, I'm sure you mentioned Duck Creek, Mingo, some of those places, the real swamps. What do people think about the swamps? You know, everybody's got this dark, eerie ideals about swamps, you know, and of course, back in history, that's where the devils and the demons and everything lived and came from. But modern day people going into those swamps, what do they think about them?
Well, one of the first things they're going to ask you is, what about the snakes?
Yeah.
So, typically, my clientele, they're either terrified of snakes and they don't want anything to do with them, or while we're fishing, they want to catch and identify snakes, too. So, usually, that's the first question that comes up. And then, do you have alligators this far north? We don't, for the most part. We've got a few records here and there every few years, one will sneak up the St. Francis or something like that.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they're not too freaked out, and they you know, they expect the variety. And there's not a whole lot of places that you can, you know, you fish Duck Creek or Mingo, and then you go 30 minutes north or west, and you're in the Ozark stream. So we're kind of, as far as biodiversity goes, this is like ground zero for biodiversity in the state of Missouri.
It really is. Really is.
You know, right here, I'm where we live now. We live just south of this, a few miles. But we can still look and actually see the edge of the Ozark Plateau. Look at the fall line a few miles away. So, you know, that change in elevation, that change in habitat, you've got different species. And it's just awesome for, you know, people that want to see variety.
Exactly. You got the best of both worlds like there. Yeah, I love that. About every time I head to East Prairie, I coming back, usually I'll loop over. I have to go through Mingo and take all those auto tours, and that's something people need to do if they've never done. And either in the spring or the fall, boy, it's just incredible. You see all kinds of wildlife in there, and it's just, man, look out across those swamps. Still, my imagination runs kind of wild, you know. And
Hell yeah.
I go all the way back, I guess, one of the first times I ever heard about Duck Creek. I was early high school, but I had a, I think it was a science teacher who was quite a freshman, and he'd gone over to Mingo, was bass fishing, throwing a great old big 9-inch Rapala. And he brought it back and showed it to us. It was broken in half. And you break your favorite lure? He said, no, I had a bass break that. He got it sideways in his mouth and broke it. And, of course, I'm imagining a 15-pound bass or something. I don't know what it weighed, you know. But bass have pretty big mouths. And like a Texas biologist told me one time, he said, I was helping him. They called them their lakes and ponds tanks down there. I was helping him chop some tanks on private property. And he was taking bass and bluegill and moving them to other tanks. And he had about a 6-pound bass. I was on the bank filming, and my wife and this guy were shocking fish up, and he got a nice bass. He said, come over, Cooper, you need to film this and take a look at this. And then it was a pretty hefty water snake. This bass was attempting to swallow. He'd folded it over two or three times because the snake was a lot longer than his stomach, but he was going to digest it and get it down. But this biologist said, you know, a bass will try to eat anything that will fit in his mouth. So I guess that's pretty well true.
yep. Large mouth are bad about that. And then big flathead catfish will do the same thing. I've had them in a live well, had them cough up water snakes, muskrats, turtles. You never know. If it's alive and near a flathead, it's in danger if he can get his mouth on it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's how they get big, isn't it? Golly.
Oh, yeah.
But, hey, Tyler, before we run out of time, man, down in the Boot Hill, another thing I want to talk about right quick, and I don't run into many people can talk about swamp rabbits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, swamp rabbits here, you know, in – We're on the edge of the Boot Hill here in Butler County. We got a ton of farm ground right here. And then, like I say, you go 10, 15 miles and you hit the hill. And my grandpa and my dad, when I was little, they were all about rabbit hunting. You know, I don't hear very many other people rabbit hunting anymore at all. It's kind of like a dying art.
Yeah.
But, that's something we really did quite a bit when I was younger.
Oh, we did too.
My grandpa was from Campbell.
Oh, yeah.
Down between Campbell and Wilhelmina, the old St. Francis River Channel, there used to be a lot of old treetops and briar thickets and just really good swamp rabbit habitat. And first time I ever went rabbit hunting, Dad set me on this spot. He said, there's that rabbit's tracks. He said, the dog's going to push him right back to you, so just be watching. Watch this creek right here. And a few minutes later, biggest rabbit in my life. I could hear the dogs getting closer. My heart was just a pounding, you know. And this big swamper come right out at the edge of the creek and was licking his feet and perked his ears up. And I shot him. Shot him right in the back. And I didn't know any better. I should have headshot him, but I just shot him right in the middle. And he was a squalling. And I just grabbed him by his feet and put him out, you know. And from right then, you know, I was like, all right, this is what it's all about. This is what everybody gets fired up about. And, we hunted swamp rabbits down there for several years. And we had some big floods that washed the tops out. And then some of the property got bought up and posted. And now it's just kind of a thing of the past. Well, rabbit hunting kind of got away from us. Everybody started turkey hunting, deer hunting more. We moved from the river bottoms up into the hills and just kind of forgot about rabbits for a while. And a few years ago, started coming back down into the river bottoms a little more, fishing, showing my boy this and that, and see a swamp rabbit here and there. You know, I always see a bunch of cottontails, but every once in a while I see a big swamp rabbit. And that following deer season, my little brother was sitting in his tree stand a pretty good ways up in the hills on an old creek, on Indian Creek, and shot a big swamp rabbit. I mean, a big swamp rabbit. This thing had to weigh, you know, 4, maybe 4.5 pounds. Great big old thing.
Wow.
And the more attention we started to pay, the more swamp rabbits we've seen. And I think there's more swamp rabbits now probably than there ever has been. where our house is here, just south of Fifth, I let my dog out one night, and he shoots off to the right side of the porch. A few minutes later, I could hear him rustling and barking out in the field. A few minutes later, a big swamp rabbit comes sneaking through the yard, crosses the steps, crosses the driveway, and runs off to the left-hand side.
Uh-huh.
Well, a few minutes later, here comes my dog from the left-hand side. Boy, that swamper was giving him a headache that night. He just could not catch up with him and figure him out. So
oh, yeah.
I think it's great.
Oh, I do, too. Isn't it fun to watch and listen? I can remember hunting along the bowels. I've seen more than swamp rabbit. We had a big ditch that run through our farm and into the bow, and it had water a lot of time. And I saw so many swamp rabbits jump in that ditch and swim, you know, 10, 15, 20 yards, then get out on the other bank. And
oh, yeah.
It
yeah.
just drives dogs nuts trying to figure that out, you know. But yeah. What a thing of beauty. But I sat on many a cypress stump waiting for those swamp rabbits to circle back. Cottontails, too. But one of the funniest things I ever saw, I guess I was down on the bayou. I think I was fishing one time, and here come a pretty good chunk of wood floating. Now, I mean, I'm talking 2 or 3 feet long, maybe a foot wide, you know. Well, there's a set of swamp rabbit right on top of it, floating right down the middle of the bayou.
I believe it. Yeah. I believe it.
I don't know if he...
Take him a ride, I guess.
He did. I've thought about that many times over years, wondering how many miles he floated down the bayou before he caught a bank, you know. But
oh, yeah.
But
yeah, we was pretty crazy about it growing up. But one time, between my grandpa and my dad, we had 27 beagles.
And 27? Wow.
And a coyote. Dad had found a coyote pup when he was turkey hunting and brought it home and kept it. And we had that thing for 9 years.
I think
he went blind when he was 5, but you talk about the biggest, most beautiful coyote you could ever see. And finally passed away when he was 9. And by that time, he didn't hardly have any teeth, and he was blind. You know, we kept him in his own pen, a big old cotton wagon we used for a pen.
Oh, man.
Anyway, I always mention him, 27 beagles and a coyote, because it was all at the same time, you know.
But, yeah, that's quite a crew. Well, we always kept a couple of beagles around and a couple of black and tan hounds, because we'd coon hunt, of course, up and down the bayous. But, boy, talking about times past, now, I got to ask you, Tyler, do you still have beagles?
I don't. I would like to. All of ours that we had, you know, and we had some good ones. We had, Sally and Ranger and Star and Lightning. Lightning was a great one, but he liked to get on deer, too.
Uh-huh.
It never really broke him of it. If we could keep him on rabbits where there were no deer, he'd run rabbits all day, but the first time he smelled a deer, he's gone.
Wait. Deer were bigger.
We had some... We had some good ones, and, I've talked to Dad a few weeks ago. I was telling him about all the rabbits down here. He said, you know, we ought to get a pair of beagles and start running them again. I said, Dad, I don't care if I kill another rabbit or not, but I do love hearing them beagles
take. Oh, absolutely. I encourage you to do that because, you know, I do get down to the boot hill once in a while.
Oh, yeah.
Still, yeah.
You're always welcome here, Bill.
Hey, I want to do that, absolutely. That moved to the top of the list on my bucket list. Want to do that again. But I do have a friend, actually, he's my minister here, Baptist minister, that's got a beagle that's halfway decent here in the hills. If you don't come up with a dog, we could bring him down there. I bet he'd get on him.
Sure could.
Yeah, but we'll have to do that. Best do that in cold weather?
Oh, yeah, definitely cold weather. We usually don't even think about trying to hunt rabbits until after the first frost and get all of the weeds and stuff killed
Exactly, yeah. I remember as a kid in our old cypress farmhouse we lived in, it was Thanksgiving tradition. We'd have a big rabbit hunt, you know. We'd go out rabbit hunting out all morning while Mom slaved away and had a big Thanksgiving dinner for us when we come in. We'd stuff ourselves, take a nap, and go out and finish the day rabbit hunting. But, what a life we've lived, man. It just doesn't get any better. Well, Tyler,
I love it.
Oh, I do too. And 77 years old, I'm going to keep doing it as long as I can.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I tell people, you know, I grew up out in the middle of nowhere, but I feel like I have $1 million worth of memories. You know, I never had a whole bunch of money, but the things I learned riding that bicycle up and down them field roads and fishing them drainage ditches, you know, it's the kind of world we live in now, it's almost scary to let a little kid run around out there by himself.
Isn't that the truth? So, we used to ride our bicycles. The boys in the community might ride 15, 20 miles a day. In fact, we got caught in the dark one time. We all slept in an old guy's barn that night. Got a hold of our parents and said, they're all fine. They're going to stay in the barn and I'll send them home in the morning. That's after he fed us, I don't know how many dozen eggs we ate. But we probably ran him out of eggs, I'm sure. But what absolute memories. Well, Tyler, here in the last couple of minutes, tell us how people can get a hold of you if they want to schedule a guided fishing trip with you.
Well, I'm on Facebook, just Tyler Goodell, you know, and if they find you, they'll find me. And then I've got a Facebook page, Ty's Multi-Species Guide Service, LLC. And if you just want to give me a call, my cell phone number is 573-714-8040. Call anytime. If you just want to talk fishing, you want to schedule a trip, we can make it happen.
Hey, sounds like fun. You know, and I still like to fish, too, so we'll have to get in a boat together as well.
Absolutely.
All right.
You want to get on a big walleye. We can make it happen in the winter. Like I always tell everybody, though, Mother Nature is the one that you got to bargain with.
Boy,
isn't that... hopefully we don't have too much rain or too warm of a winter. A lot of times when it's easing in, you know, and you get them real warm deer season, it's not just bad for the deer hunters, it's bad for the walleye fishermen, too.
Absolutely. Well, Tyler, I appreciate you being on the show with me and folks from Tyler Goodell, myself, Bill Cooper. We're living our outdoor dreams. We encourage you to get in the outdoors and enjoy your dreams as well.
People love a good mustache. People also love a good firearm. The fine people down at Pond Center like both. They have the largest selections of firearms in the area, and with a friendly, knowledgeable staff of hombres to help you pick the gun that's right for you. You could end up riding into the sunset with a gun you love. Find them at pc72guns.com, on shelf, in store, online. Or give them a call at 573-426-GUNS. That's Pond Center. Guns welcome. Mustache appreciated.
Captain Brian Wilson runs one of the tightest bow fishing operations in the business. Stainwater Bow Fishing operates out of Jerome, Missouri, and the beautiful Missouri Ozarks. They cover most Ozark streams and lakes. You haven't lived until you've searched Ozark waters during the night with Stainwater Bow Fishing while looking for giant gar, carp, and buffalo. Captain Wilson also runs a second boat on Taneycomo Lake. Call today to book a trip with Stainwater Bow Fishing at 573-263-8016. Again, that's 573-263-8016. Be sure and shoot straight.
The Living the Dream Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, The Fly Rod Journals, SmokerBuilder.com, Cowtown USA, Westover Farms, Scenic Rivers Taxidermy, Stained Water Bow Fishing, Scenic Rivers Guide Service and Tours, Huzzah Valley Resort, Devil's Backbone Outfitters, J&J Charters, Kaufman Cove, Alaska, Bean Creek Game Calls, Misty Mountain Guide Service, ASO Guides and Outfitters with Ryan Walker, The Rambling Angler, and Rich's Famous Burgers.
Land ownership is the American dream. Land is the basis of all life. Our wise use of this most precious of resources ensures the survival and growth of free institutions and our American way of life. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we value the traditions and freedoms that land provides us. Every day we seek the solace of a mountain sunrise over traffic jams and smog, the calming silence of a bubbling stream over the sirens of the city, and the quiet of the countryside over the hustle and bustle of the world. We hunt, we fish, we farm. We live off the land. It's our mission to help our clients live out their dreams on the land as we do. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we believe that it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. Join us 5 days a week on Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast as the Living the Dream Outdoor Dream Team explores the most desired outdoor properties in the Midwest and whisks you away to incredible hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation opportunities. Host Bill Cooper, an inductee of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, will be joined by members of the Living the Dream Outdoors team each week as they tell tall tales, unveil tips and tactics, and rub elbows with some of the biggest names in the outdoor world. You'll also find the Living the Dream Outdoors podcast on your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.